Good morning. This is T. Forsyth with Rochester Indie Media. On April 4th, I had the chance to speak with Nick Matern, a Vietnam War veteran turned anti-war activist. He runs the website nodrones.org, that's KNOWDRONES.org, and he has traveled nationwide showcasing his model drones. In addition to his current anti-war activities, he teaches workshops on how to build the model drones and will be giving a workshop at the Convergence being held in Syracuse, New York, Resisting Drones, Global War and Empire, from April 26th to 28th. You can find out more about the Convergence at upstatedroneaction.org. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself, like how you got into activism and this drone stuff that you're working on?
I was in the Navy, and I volunteered to go to Vietnam. I got over there in 1962 and 63. I wasn't involved with combat, but I stayed over there for another 9 months after I got out of the Navy. I worked for a newspaper, a Vietnamese English language newspaper called the Saigon Post. I got to travel around the country for a while, and I got a real feeling for the war, but I thought that, we were fighting communism. When I got back to the United States, some of my friends challenged me to read up on how this war started, how the United States was involved, and I ended up being very ashamed that I had anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. So at that time, I got involved with, activities to try to stop the Vietnam War, and, I ended up doing other jobs that related to, struggles, but I got back into doing, more full-time anti-war work with the beginning of the Iraq War, yeah. And just carried through up until the moment, but I got very interested in the drone issue because I wrote an article for truthout.org, I think it was August in 2010, and that article dealt with a man named Stephen Larranger, who was the head of the ITT Corporation. Mm-hmm. And basically identified him as a war profiteer, but I was interested in ITT because a friend of mine here found that they were building the bomb release mechanisms and missile releases for Predator drones and Reaper drones. And so I got to looking into drone warfare, the drone technology, and also I built a replica of a Reaper drone because we went to demonstrate in Stephen Larranger's hometown, Greenwich, Connecticut. Mm-hmm. I think it was October of 2010. And this replica attracted a lot of attention, and I took it to these demonstrations and began to realize that we should build more of these, and so that's happened with the help of, for the first, additional five with people from upstate New York, and then since then we've built, I think, about 17 there in various cities in the U.S., including Honolulu and Hilo, Hawaii, and the replicas have been a great educational tool. And we've been on tour using them, and right now we're planning on building more of them so that people can do long-term education work in the community about drones, but also looking into the reasons for these wars that we're involved with, and that would include resources, oil, minerals, the competition among industrialized nations for these harder and harder to find non-renewable resources. So we hope to do what we didn't do at the end of the Vietnam War, which was to educate the public into our real purposes in Vietnam, and why we failed, having not to do with necessarily just the power of the enemy militarily, but because the whole premise of the war and trying to take over for the French as essentially a colonial power in Southeast Asia was a failed idea from the beginning. This is, you know, sort of brings us up, you know, right to the moment.
How did you go about, like, do you have skills in building these things? I've seen them before. They look great. I'm just wondering, like, how that came about, how you got into this idea of building the drones themselves.
Yes. Well, I'm a carpenter.
Okay.
When I was a kid, I built model planes. So basically, you know, it started out forming the, you know, the nose and the tail section out of, you know, a styrofoam kind of insulation, plastic, you know, on each end of a cardboard tube, the kind they pour concrete in. And then I was able to find someone who would use a vacuum forming machine to be able to make the nose and tail sections uniformly out of plastic. And then we would bond these to the end of the tube and cover everything with fiberglass and sort of Bondo-like filler to give it this kind of a shape.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's very tedious to do that. And a friend of mine, George Gersey, and I have made a number of these with this method, and we're getting more requests for drone replicas now. And so we're hoping to be able to have a mold made for the fuselage, for the body of it, and then to make, you know, the bodies out of a fiberglass-like substance. We'd have somebody do that, and then, you know, we'll build the wings and the other parts.
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be a lot stronger. It'll probably be lighter, a little easier for people to manage. So that's where we hope to go with it, and we'll probably do money raising, like crowdfunding,
mm-hmm.
you know, on Kickstarter, maybe some other sites, so that we can still provide these to people, you know, for any, you know, $400-$500 a piece to various groups. But the cost is more than that, so we'll have to subsidize this with the fundraising part. But we were concerned, you know, a couple of months ago about whether, because of the increased publicity around drones, people wouldn't really need these anymore, and we didn't want to build them for no reason. But what we're finding now is that people still do want them, and that they still do have a lot of, you know, power to attract attention and questions. So we're going to carry forward with that, I think.
That's really cool.
We are, I think, at a moment in history around the world where people have begun to get a sense of, you know, the capacity of these drones to watch people incessantly and to kill them at will. Certainly, this is happening already in Pakistan and Afghanistan, in Yemen particularly, but also it's happened in Somalia, the Philippines, and I was told yesterday that the United States is engaging drones in the attack against the Kurds in the northern part of Iraq in cooperation with the Turkish government. And that, I was told that that isn't been completely verified, but that somebody did speak of that at a forum overseas that, you know, where this person attended. So we have already a substantial basis to believe that our government and other governments are perfectly willing to violate it, you know, international law and domestic law to kill people that are viewed as a threat. But it is a moment when, if people do rise up here and in other countries, we may have a chance to establish prohibitions against drones carrying weapons altogether and against drone surveillance, and with the idea that if we don't do that, we may not be able to protect even the rights we have to privacy, to due process, to freedom of assembly. Our societies can be turned into ones where people are paranoid, very suspicious of folks they would otherwise rely on and trust. And really, the idea of being constantly watched by an authority is really destructive of what we have come to think of as civil society. The government here in the United States at this moment is encouraging, through the Homeland Security Department, encouraging police to buy drones, to use them to watch people. And they're doing this with a full understanding that there is no agency or department within the federal government that has taken the responsibility for establishing rules for drone operations with respect to privacy or weaponry.
Mm-hmm.
That this is a completely open field for the introduction of all kinds of drones. With the only concern at this moment about whether they can safely operate in the company of other aircraft, but the police now have the airspace up to 400 feet within line of sight to operate drones anywhere. And so people really, we all must rise up and say that we won't permit this. Because once it's established and once it's entrenched in all these police departments and once people are hired to watch these things and keep records and when people are hired to make drone information available in court and to have all this infrastructure set up around this kind of surveillance, it's going to be probably impossible to ever get rid of it. And these things are, images people have to understand are going to be images of people being followed day in and day out. When they come out of their house, they're going to see who people associate with, whether somebody, gives you a pat on the arm, gives you a hug, gives you a kiss. They're going to see where you go to the store. They're going to see what your relatives are doing when you go to visit with them, see you playing in the backyard. If you are a person of interest, hundreds of people who are in association with you will also have their activities monitored, observed, associations, and the threat of guilt by association is profound. So search warrants aren't going to, people say, well, only follow a person with a warrant. These things are not going to protect all these other people who come in contact with it. And they say, well, this is nothing different than, a surveillance camera on a telephone pole or a building. But it's very, very different because a person can be followed even into their house with heat sensing devices. So this is a world that was inconceivable to any of us, mm-hmm. even 5 years ago. But all over this country and in other countries, but particularly here, there are researchers in universities working on all kinds of little details to make all this possible. There's thousands of people in this country right now working under government contracts and, at the best of business, working within corporations to perfect all the various little details of a kind of a collective genius to make this kind of observation possible. And of course, once you have people being observed this way, it's very clear that these drones can carry a variety of weapons, from the smallest kinds of poisons up to hellfire missiles and bombs, depending on the size of the drone. So once you've established these kinds of things within police departments within the U.S. airspace, and then you have no rules against any kind of weapons carrying, you can imagine that this is going to be a very frightening place to live.
Definitely. I wanted to ask you, so this is sort of a, not only is it a nightmare currently for the people that are being killed by these things, but it's a potential nightmare for the Constitution, civil rights, people's right to privacy in this country, and just in general, more control and domination by the government of its own populace. And you said people need to stop this and need to rise up. And I'm wondering, to you, what does that look like? What does rising up look like? How do we stop it?
Well, what I would say in the first instance is that there have been places like Charlottesville, Virginia, Seattle, Washington, where the politics of this was forcing the police and the mayor's city council to, in Seattle, they sent the drones back to the manufacturer. In Charlottesville, Virginia, there's restrictions, I believe, that say that information gathered by drones can't be used in courts, that say there will be no weapons carrying on drones. In the state of Virginia, there was a bill passed for a moratorium on drones flying over the state of Virginia for 2 years, but the governor's under a lot of pressure from lobbying from these military contractors and drone makers. Mm-hmm. And so he's stalled on his, legislation, mm-hmm. Passing, signing it. So it means that in the first instance, people need to be talking to their local politicians and saying, we want you to protect us and assert the rights of this government locally to prevent drones from flying over this city, this town, and to say that the police may not purchase drones, mm-hmm. and that the federal government may not fly drones over this community that are carrying weapons, nor may they fly drones that are doing surveillance of this community. And this is going to end up in court someplace, but the more communities that assert these rights of protection of their citizens, the more the politics is going to be to keep these drones out of the sky, and I think that's the probably the most effective way to do this. Now, there are demonstrations, and people will demonstrate not only against the drone killing in other countries, but to bring these drones here. But people in these towns, we hope, will be getting more and more information about the essential lawlessness that the federal government has permitted to exist around these things, and so people will assert their own rights of self-protection.
So, at the end of the month in Syracuse, there's a convergence happening. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, I think that the people in upstate New York for several years have been, 25 or 30 people at the heart of this have been very determined and well organized in their own protest at Hancock Air Force Base, mm-hmm. A civil disobedience there, or civil resistance is probably the better way to put it, where people do get arrested to cause an awakening conscience and focus on the drone killing. Mm-hmm. And I think what's happened is that more and more people have learned of this, around the country, and see Syracuse as a very important note of resistance to this, and the people there have done a lot of outreach and building an organization of welcome for people and support for them to come there, and it's a very unusual and I think a heartening kind of manifestation that it's been very attractive to people who are concerned about this. So I think that there's a group there that are very motivated by their religious beliefs around maybe some people familiar with the Catholic Worker, mm-hmm. other people who are very strongly and historically in their lives, not just for this but other ways, motivated by conscience toward peacemaking and resisting of the military directions that this country is taking. So it has to be understood in terms of a network of people who have this long-term commitment, who have been very successful at working together in that region of upstate New York.
Mm-hmm. So there's this convergence, Resisting Drones, Global War and Empire, April 26 to 28 in Syracuse. And you're going to be at this convergence, and I'm wondering what part you're going to play in it.
Well, I think one of the things that I'll be doing, they're going to have a workshop on how people, can construct their own model drones to use, for education and protest. And I mm-hmm. think I'll be participating in that workshop.
Cool.
And also, we will be having, I think, discussions in various ways about, what will be done to carry forward after these April days of action. And I think, there'll be other things, too, that I'll be involved with. But those are the principal things right now.
That's really cool. Let me ask you, is there anything I haven't asked you that you'd really like to say?
Well, I think that right now there's a lot of more focus on how these drones are going to be coming to the United States and the concerns that fears people have here about their rights. And we're living in a very, very peculiar environment right now in this country, and in that our window to the world through the various press organizations that we have here has had the shades pulled down when it comes to the human impact of our wars in these other countries.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have government censorship here, but we do have editors all over this country, television, particularly picture editors who are basically deciding not to show us images mm-hmm. of victims of drone warfare or war victims generally where we're involved with war. In other words, if you go into the newspaper or watching television on any given day, you will not see even though 14 Americans killed last month in Afghanistan, you will not see any images of combat or any images of these people who have been killed or people who are wounded. You will not see images of Afghanis who are killed on a routine basis in Afghanistan.
Mm-hmm.
We're still involved in a war in Iraq and in ways of having mercenaries there, having a huge involvement with corporations. But you will not see, when these car bombs go off, anything except the wreckage of a car. You will not see human beings, blown apart, anybody picking a hand up out of the street. So without these images, and we understand that these pictures are extremely powerful, we will not have the empathy with within our population to say we have to stop this. We don't have the same empathy that we had even in the Vietnam War, how atrocious that was. But finally, people, their emotions began to get worn down by pictures of American soldiers being killed, by Vietnamese being killed, by this young girl who was, you know, running naked from the war.
Right.
So folks here have to understand that our emotions, our empathy, have been really shut down in a very, very systematic and conscious way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a huge problem, because we need, you know, humans need empathy to understand their circumstances, and it's a survival emotion as well as, you know, maybe a better part of human nature. Because if you don't know how people are suffering because of what your government's involved with, you really don't understand what's happening, and, or why people would be angry with you, or all these things. So it's an extremely dangerous thing that this government and these press outlets are doing right now, and we're going to reap a real storm of killing from what we're involved with. And drones may be, you know, directed against us, you know, as part of this. We had this General Cartwright, I think James Cartwright, who was an Obama advisor, and a couple of weeks ago, he spoke in Chicago about his concerns that the drones, the attacks that we're doing, are going to come back at us, and are coming back in various forms, that they're making many more enemies than anything. You know, he didn't speak to the ethics of whether we should be killing people without due process, or intruding ourselves into other countries without any kind of official permission or war. But he was talking about the practical effects of this. Now, this man is a Marine pilot. And so when people say, oh, well, it's better to have a drone than, you know, risk American lives, as a Marine pilot, he fully understands the dangers of flying in war zones. But even given that, he felt that the drones are a very dangerous thing to be using. And people here are really not being informed by the press about this kind of commentary in any detailed way. So people say, well, you know, what are we, you know, what can we do and to get this information? Well, I think pressure has to be put on Congress and put on the government to make public every videotape of every combat mission flown by a drone where people are killed, so that the public can see what the drone saw. They can see who was targeted. They can see the explosions. They can see if there's any way to tell who, you know, survived it, what the remnants are of it, and to have also the written report of every drone combat mission. There's a reason that they are keeping this all very, very secret. It's because, in my opinion, it's a hideous record of you know, killing and maiming people. And this would not be, if all this were shown to the public, I believe that these drone attacks would stop immediately.
Right. Nick, where can people go to get more information?
Well, there are several websites where there's quite a lot of good material. Our website, knowdrones.com, knowdrones.com, has a listing of all the actions that are going to happen in April.
Mm-hmm.
Around counter-drone work. There are interviews there with, and there will be more of them, dealing with the background of our struggles in the world to, you know, capture resources and also, you know, where we can go instead of, you know, taking the path we're on. There's some government reports there about drones that I think are important for people to read. Another very good website is the droneswatch.org that is put forward by Code Pink. Upstate Drone Coalition, Upstate Drone Action. Judy Bellow has done a really good job of providing information on that website. I'd say those would be the major ones right now. The Fellowship of Reconciliation is on their website circulating a petition to try to get a ban on drone warfare, which is very, very important. And so I'd say those are the major ones right now.
Well, Nick, thanks so much for the interview.
You're listening to Rochester Indie Media.